Department. There is an apology extended from the DG that he could not find a plane to come this way. But otherwise the team is here, and the leader of the team will introduce those who are here, and with without much ado, kicking the dust.
Good morning, honorable members.
Before you start, I think there's one apology, honorable business. Baba Mzizi is unable to attend. Otherwise, we haven't received any other apologies. I'm sorry for that.
Okay, thank you, Reverend. The DIT team, as you indicated, that we are representing the Director General, and we present the annual report. I'm here with myself, I'm not supposed to, I'm the Chief Operating Officer in the department. And on my far left, I have Monolith, I think you know some of you, the parliamentary officer based here in Cape Town, and the CFO next to him, which is Ms. Esther Makau. And on my right hand side, I have Mr. Ralph Ackerman, responsible for financial management, and Mr. Peter Luki, from the Environmental Quality Management Branch. He's responsible for air quality management. And Dr. Ofer Steyn, who's from MCM, particularly focusing on research and Antarctic Islands. Reverend, I'm aware that we did circulate the documents were tabled on time to Parliament. We do have the annual report that was tabled to Parliament, which is this document. And with it we have a presentation that was also circulated. So the presentation just attempts to lift the content of this document that was tabled, and I would run through it, and my colleagues here would then also add where it's necessary, and also deal with questions when it is time for questions. I will then proceed by...
Before I proceed, can I raise my concern here? That this is now the second annual report that has been presented to us by the department, and the Director General is not here again. Although she has put in apology, but I think I have to raise it, Chairperson, because one gets a feeling that there is a total disregard for this committee, and I want to raise my concern. Because if you, even if you look at the website, Chairperson, the Select Committee is not even featured on their website. But all the members of the Portfolio Committee details on their website under the parliamentary site there. So I have to raise it, because this is the second time, and one gets a feeling that we are being treated as second class citizens in Parliament. Thank you.
Yeah, I think you're raising valid concerns, honorable member. Issues of this kind have been hammered upon for many years in the past, that we should be treated the same. But it seems it doesn't dawn very clear for the department to be sensitive on such issues, which is very, very much unfortunate. And we don't want to develop an attitude, because if this recurs, we will develop an attitude. We will be unkind and we will hammer. And we would love really to cooperate with the department as far as we can. We'd love to do that. But if the department is not prepared to cooperate, that will restrain the relationships. it's good that a member could discover the sin. Why the NA portfolio committee is appearing on the website and the select committee not? I don't think you have any excuse in as far as that is concerned. It's a total disregard that we don't exist, you know. Which is very much unfortunate. It makes me also to raise our concern. Two successive weeks, the department was requesting us to postpone. We're totally disregarded. And that's why we said, let this meeting today go on under protest. These members are seated here protesting the way we have been treated by the department. I was thinking that we had a good relationship in the past, but it's now going down the drain. I am an activist. If I plow back the spirit of activism, then you'll know the colors of somebody you have never seen before. That is not the case. So you're saying to us, we should not trust you. The department is saying to us we should not trust them. You become realistic if you apologize, you see to it that you don't commit the same mistake again. Otherwise, it becomes a joke. This member raises serious concerns. Why are we not treated the same? What is skewed in somebody's mind? I don't like that. It's hurting me. It's making me to bleed. I want somebody who's healing me, who's restoring me, restoring my dignity so that together we are able to move on. This makes me to bleed. Well, how do you force somebody to respect you if that person does not want to respect you? How do you do it? This has been recurring for rather too long now. This committee should not be treated like that.
Reverend and honorable members, I think I hear you and we hear you as the department. I think definitely, I don't think that the intention is to undermine this committee. The issue that's been raised on the website, I was not aware of it myself, and I will check it and make sure that it's corrected if it was not. Because in the past, we used to have both committee information. Not unless then we had, I'm not sure about what might have been the problem. Maybe during the time we're migrating websites, and I don't know what has happened, but I will check that and correct it immediately if it is so. At the same time, I think the other issue that's been raised, it is true that the DG was not here last year, she was overseas, and this year, now something happened, I think, around the whole morning. We were all not aware that we were supposed to be here this week because of a technical error in the administration process. We do also try and get, I mean, the reason why we decided to have a dedicated parliamentary officer in Cape Town as a department over and above the ministry, where is Johan Durant. It was to actually make sure that we've got a plan with each of the committees. And the way we anticipated this would work, as a department we do plan for the whole year, because international meetings and so on, the program, we get it like now. For next year, we already have it. and we normally plan around December, January, and we ask dates from the committees, but we know that Parliament meets or sits, I mean, your program now is being prepared on a quarterly basis, but before you also had, there was a time when Parliament was giving us the program for the full year and would then structure everything and include it in our program accordingly. Without making excuses for the department, I think we do have a problem. I mean, even with the deals, Chair, if I may say.
Maybe let's pause here and we'll move on because we have constraints of time.
Yeah.
And around about 12, we should be through because there's a special caucus organized for half to 12.
Okay.
I think we will discuss this matter at our next meeting.
Can I request that the DG, because the DG said he's going to have a specific meeting with the Chair when she could not make it, when she phoned yesterday, to say she is unable to get a flight, because the meeting that she is in at Kruger, it's an international meeting which was organized with international affairs and is hosted by South Africa, and the minister, both the minister and the deputy minister, were not going to make it. Even last month, that's what they had confirmed. So she was trying to change the flight, but she did not manage to. But she said she's going to have a meeting, because I think this is a matter that she must discuss with you, Chair, and also following that, maybe you have to have a meeting with the minister so that it can be dealt with properly. Because as we are here, we probably would just take the message back to them.
Yeah, in fact, it would be preferable that we discuss with the minister where the committee members are, because I may not be able to raise what they would love to raise, you know. It's a collective matter, it's not for an individual person, you know. But let's continue for now, because we have something.
Okay. All right, thanks. The presentation just starts with the vision and mission. In the document, we on the annual report, we always outline the vision as we have already done so in the strategic plan of the department, and the DEED programs that are reflected in the E&E document that gets approved by Treasury, which is what we are reporting against. So this annual report is based on the E&E document that was prepared for the year 2006-07 financial year. And under the pro performance program, we had tourism program one, and marine and coastal management, biodiversity and conservation, environmental quality and protection, international cooperation and resources, and administration. And administration is actually program one. And under those programs, particularly, I'm not going to go through the vision and the mission. Members, I think we have discussed that during our planning session with yourselves in the past. Just under program one then includes the work of the department around the strategic leadership, corporate services, the minister, the deputy minister, and the DG fall under that program, and the organizational performance management and information management. And under program two, we have environmental quality and protection, which is mostly covering the work on improving the quality and safety of the environment. And that we have sub-programs on air quality management and waste management. And then under program three, which is marine and coastal management, which is the program that seeks to promote development and management of South Africa's marine and coastal environments in a way that ensures sustainability. And that program, we've got a number of sub-programs, research in the Antarctic Islands, integrated coastal management, and resource management. And then under tourism, which is program four, which focuses on creating conditions for sustainable tourism growth. And then program five, which is biodiversity and conservation, which has got sub-programs on parks and transfrontier conservation areas and biodiversity and heritage. And then program six is the social responsibility and projects program. If I may just indicate to members that for this current year, this has changed. The program 6 then includes planning and business performance. That was approved by Treasury in the last year. So this E&E document was then prepared when we're still having these programs as outlined here today. Then we have, the department is responsible for a number of statutory bodies, which is our public entities, the South African Tourism, South African National Biodiversity Institute, the Tourism Grading Council, South African National Parks, South African Weather Services, and the Great St. Lucia Wetland Park. Then I'm going to then program 2, which is tourism. In terms of the achievements, in line with what we had in the E&E document, in terms of international travel, year 2006, we achieved over 8 million international arrivals. And then on domestic travel steps, we have domestic travelers, which were around 12.1 million, and about 37.1 million trips were undertaken, and the annual average was 3.1. The challenges under that area members is that the local tourism is still not necessarily expanding to the other provinces. You may recall that we had indicated that there were least visited provinces like the Eastern Cape and Limpopo and the Northern Cape. So it is, the trend is still the same. Mpumalanga, Gauteng, KZN and the Western Cape received most arrivals. And around the area of quality assurance, we conducted SA welcome training for ports of entry officials so that they are able to interact favorably with tourists and potential visitors. And we have about 4,905 establishments that were graded by the end of March 2007, out of a total of rooms that were graded, which was 87,281. This area we are escalating, and you will see in the annual report of this financial year, based on the agreements that we signed with the FIFA match in preparation for 2010 World Cup. They are considering, or there has already been a consideration for rooms that are non-hotel to be used to accommodate people during 2010, and provided those are graded, and therefore there is an SMME support program to ensure that we escalate grading for some of the bed and breakfast and establishments. On tourism safety, we developed a national framework for tourism safety awareness in partnership with SAPS, provinces, and the tourism industry. And the industry did adopt our tourism safety plan, and there is an implementation plan that is now being used as a framework by various provinces in the country. There are models, particularly in the Western Cape and Mpumalanga, that we've taken from, which are seemingly working, because the issue of tourist safety is very important. And whilst we acknowledge as a department that the safety and security is responsible for providing that, we still have to create an environment that makes tourists comfortable that they can come to the country, and there will be things, or there will be measures put in place if there are problems whilst we have visitors. And in a number of instances, we make sure that there is a call center where they can reach and report incidences where appropriate. And there are tourism safety pamphlets which contains the tips that have been circulated and distributed to all the provinces, which then are made available to the various visitors. Around the area of product development, we have for 2010 accommodation, I indicated that there is an agreement with MESH, and we are supposed to have about 3,500 SMME establishments accredited, and therefore we got into that agreement with MESH last year. We've developed investment packages in line with the global competitiveness study that was undertaken by the department in partnership with the Department of Trade and Industry. There were indications that in some areas we have a tendency to develop products that are not necessarily or overload the market in terms of providing the same kind of products. In order to diversify, then we have a framework which is the global competitiveness framework that we use to inform product development. And the main challenge in the area of establishments is that the grading is still a voluntary system, and therefore, because of that, we might have targets, and it is not necessary that we would be able to make everybody grade their establishment. So it depends on whether the owners of those products are willing to participate, and also there is some cost to it that they have to incur. And the other being then the issue of securing investments in some of the other areas. It's not very easy to attract private sector to some of the areas where we would like to grow tourism. And then in the area of unblocking the channels, which is one of our key focus areas, we've been working with the Department of Home Affairs and Foreign Affairs regarding visa restrictions. And there's a forum that's established, and at least that gave us results last year. For instance, for India and China, there has been a reduction of the number of days when people apply for visas from 10 days to at least about 5 days. And there is a template that has been developed on visa requirements for new portfolio markets. And then the main challenge here, again, is to maintain a balance between growing tourism and securing the country in terms of what would then be outlined as a security requirement by either the security cluster within government. And then in terms of the egg frequencies in portfolio markets, again, this is part of unblocking. The department worked closely with the Department of Transport and Public Enterprises last year and developed an aviation strategy that was approved by Cabinet. And as a result of that approval of that ELIF strategy, tourism trade and investment workshops were held in the five Gulf cooperation countries, Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, and so on. And this has presented an opportunity for us to expand and create potential then for bringing tourists to the country. But again, this is not an area where we have got control over. Air services bilateral negotiations are being led by the Department of Transport, and they take into account a number of other issues which are important in terms of what the priorities of the country are, balancing the economic priorities and some of the social priorities of the country. On the area of skills development, tourism skills development, the department held a national conference, the skills conference last year, which some of the members attended in Gauteng. And out of that, there was a declaration, and the department completed tourism skills audit in partnership with the PETA, which is the CETA responsible for tourism, and the industry. And out of that, then we have a sector skills plan that now has been completed in this financial year, but at the time of the end of the last financial year, we had just drafted the skills plan. And on the training side for tour guides from previously disadvantaged groups, a total of 433 was trained, and out of which 108 was funded by DIT, and then the rest, which is 335, was 35 was funded by CETA. We, on transformation in respect of the BEE Charter, tourism BEE Charter and scorecard implementation, we conducted a baseline study on the state of the industry transformation, and the results were also made available during the last year when there was a tourism conference. 50% increase in procurement from credit establishment by national government departments has been achieved. There is a self-assessment tool for tourism industry on the BEE Charter. So members of the industry at any point, any business can take that tool and assess where, how they are performing against the scorecard. And we have developed a verification system which must be aligned with the codes of good practice, which codes of good practice were only published by DTI this year in February. And the public sector compliance tool is also in place and it's been agreed to by the department and the provinces. The key challenge is just the compliance. We think that we, at this point in time, to comply with the charter and the scorecard, it can present difficulties because also this is still a voluntary system. It's not something that we can enforce. The other area, which is the SME support and the second economy intervention, a number of SMEs have been supported through the Tourism Enterprise Program, which is a partnership between the department and the business trust, and out of which about 993 SMEs were provided support, which range from business linkages to marketing, development of marketing plans and business plans. And there were a number of transactions that those SMEs got involved in. Some of them then were involved in things that led to a value that is totaled to 751 million. And the department has got a tourism-focused second economy strategy, just to make sure that we look at the other SMEs that are still up and coming. Under the program Marine and Coastal Management, which is program 3, we had the following achievements. In relation to rights allocation, we concluded the appeals process after the allocation of 2,480 long-term fishing rights. And about 59% of those rights are BEE compliant, and BEE compliant in terms of the various key areas, both in relation to ownership, in terms of management involvement in the business, training or investment in training and so on. The permits that were issued in 3 new fisheries, which is octopus, east coast, round herring and whelks, and we undertook a survey on horse mackerel that was completed last year, and then we issued about 10 permits for the eco-tourism type activities, both based whale watching and shark cage diving. The other area in terms of regulation or the improving the regulatory environment, we published the Integrated Coastal Management Bill last year, which now already has been put through the parliamentary process, and this committee would be also discussing. We gazetted draft marine aquaculture policy for public comment, and the chair might just be happy that this has been done in consultation with the Department of Agriculture and Water Affairs. We've agreed that our jurisdiction is on the marine side of fish farming. The fresh water fish farming is still the Department of Agriculture. and water says would still have to issue permits because they are still responsible for fresh water management. But still over and above that, the policy and framework does allow for partnerships between the three departments, in particular around disease management. A disease control function is a competence of the Department of Agriculture. The other aspects were related to the transfer of fishing rights. In relation to the existing policy, there is a framework, or it makes provision for reviewing the rights after a particular period, and we have a draft policy that then would inform a process where a fisherman that has got a fishing right would like to transfer to another business entity. We developed a draft policy for subsistence and small-scale fisheries, which policy is now being finalized with the sector or the beneficiaries, or the intended beneficiaries. The challenges that we are experiencing in this regard is the issue of the depletion of fishing of marine stocks. And Dr. Ofersteyn can talk to these members maybe after I've finished the presentation, just to highlight what we have picked up and what the main challenges are. And as you might be aware, some of the fisheries the minister has had to close, like the abalone fishery. A greater dependency of coastal communities on marine living resources, and the policy gap that has been existing in respect of subsistence fisheries. On scientific research, we completed economic studies on three commercial fisheries, hake hand line, hake long line, and demersal shark. We have developed a program for science graduates to assist us in this area of critical skills, and where we've been struggling to also get PDI members to be involved in the management of the fisheries and also in the research field in particular. We undertook two voyages on the Antarctic program, and Marion Island base was 60% complete last year, and it should be concluded in this current financial year. In the area of monitoring and compliance, we've improved the monitoring capacity through the new vessel monitoring system, and we have joined initiatives around the National Youth Service just in terms of deployment of cadres that would be used as monitors along the coast. We had about 900 of volunteers that participated in that program last year. Officials at ports of entry are trained to administer the CITES, which is the International Convention in Trading on Endangered Species. Approximately, the coastline has got an officer in at least an average area of about 7.5 kilometers per officer. In other areas where we've got more partnerships, we even go to 5 kilometers being guarded. We have various partnerships with KZN, FM Velo, some of the park sports like Eastern Cape Park Sports, and so on, and some municipalities. The achievements of in regard to the Marine Living Resources Act and financial management, we have attained full implementation of the new financial system. I think members of the DG did indicate sometime that we had particular challenges in terms of the Marine Living Resources Fund, and we're then implementing some controls and looking at systems, new systems that would assist us with proper accountability within the MRLF. And the MAS system has been developed and is currently being used. Around revenue generation, we still were resolving legal compliance issue with the National Treasury, and 106 million rands was recovered from the industry for services that were rendered. And I think at the last time we were also having challenges of money not coming in from the industry, whether that people have payments, they were not paying for the levies and so on. And the challenges were still poor industry compliance, but there is improvement compared to the year before the last one. I'm now moving to biodiversity and conservation program. Under the focus area on policy and legislation, there were regulations that we published last year in terms of the Biodiversity Act. The threatened or protected species regulations were gazetted, and then we also listed the types of species that are threatened in our ecosystem. We published an elephant management policy, as well as the norms and standards for managing elephant populations, and we've been discussing these with the provinces, and now we are approaching finality in this financial year. At the end of the financial year, we had a draft national biodiversity framework, and we also developed a draft risk assessment framework for genetic modified organisms, GMOs. Around the conservation and sustainability focus area, as part of the Keep and Parks program, which is aimed at building a future conservation and sustainability conscious nation, about 7,400 children visited 10 national parks, and our target was 500 children or kids. A total of 6 genetically modified organisms application were assessed and recommended. As you might be aware, we have a council, a GMO council, which is made up of the key departments, in particular agriculture and their research institutes, and DIT is then part of that. And we then make contributions in respect of environmental impacts of the GMOs before they can be released in our ecosystem. And one application for the release of the biological control agent was received, and it was assessed and recommended. And biocontrol agent members, again, it's just the natural enemies to plants or even animals. Some of the plants, in particular the alien invasive species or the alien plants, even if they are not invasive, because they come from different environments, maybe in Australia or somewhere in Europe, and when they are brought to the country, they don't have natural enemies existing so that they could control their growth, and therefore they grow at extremely expedient rates compared to our natural plants in the country. So those biocontrol agents then are more naturalized types of agents. So they are still assessed by the GMO Council. We made significant progress in the integration of ecosystems that were separated by man-made within South African boundaries through removal of fences that contributes to our TFCA program, or Transfrontier Conservation Area program. And under the focus area on expansion of protected areas, last year Rustenburg Veld was declared as a World Heritage Site. It went through the whole process, which is internationally acclaimed. And we had the Malekuleke wetland gaining recognition as a Ramsar site. And in compliance with the Protected Areas Act, we had management plans for 19 national parks that were assessed. We have not yet gone to assess the provincial management plans. And we have set up the Protected Areas Register, and we have a verification system that is linked to it. A fallbot was deproclaimed, and a new park was then proclaimed, which is called Mugala National Park. Management capacity for marine protected areas was addressed through a partnership, particularly with Sand Parks and also MCM. The challenge here has been more around balancing social and scientific needs in terms of management of protected areas, especially where there has been land claims, post-settlement support programs and preferences by communities, and they tend to present a number of challenges. We, in working with our neighbors, we reached an agreement with Botswana and Zimbabwe on the establishment of the Limpopo Shasha TSCA, and that now that includes the Mapungubwe World Heritage Site. On trans-boundary conservation, the United Nations praised our Benguela Current Large Marine Ecosystem Program, which is being led by MCM, and it's a joint initiative between Angola, Namibia, and South Africa. And it is a flagship program on under the International Waters Program. Around the Environmental Quality Protection, which is Program 2, in the area of policy and legislation, we promulgated last year in July the new EIA regulation, moving away from Environmental Conservation Act, but promulgating regulations under the NEMA provision. And we also had a NEMA amendment bill that was published last year that seeks to align and make sure that we've got an effective system on the EIA management, and opening up the opportunity for not just only using the EIA as a system, but looking at other systems like that would then assist us with managing cumulative impacts and so on and so on. I mean, the EIA itself as a tool is not as sensitive to risk assessment and cumulative impacts. So the amendment to NEMA then allows for the new provisions in terms of the EIA regulations to be effected. And that is supposed to be also considered by Parliament during the course of, I think, early next year or end of this year. We identified and published sensitive areas that were initiated for Gauteng and the Western Cape, which again is in line with the new EIA regulations. EIA applications and appeals, and in terms of processing and the time that it takes, you might recall, members, that there's been an impression generally that the EIA system is blocking development, and the department then undertook an audit across the provinces to look at capacity issues, whether there's enough people and what is the load, the normal workload in terms of the number of applications that they receive and the extent of comprehensiveness of that application. Because again, there's a difference between, and I mean, processing an EIA for instance, what is this thing on radars and satellites? For a cell phone mast, a vessel, for instance, a petrol station, and even vessels, a harbour, or even an airport development. So, looking at the various complexities of the applications that they process, and there was then an audit, and out of that audit, the department then undertook certain things like funding capacity, providing consultants, developing guidelines, and so on and so on. So we had 5,300 EIA applications backlog that we determined last year, and we reduced it to about 3,200 by the end of the financial year. And indeed, because there are applications that are handled at a national level, normally the applications that come from other public entities, national other national departments and even some of the other provincial agencies. And 75% of that backlog was then reduced at the national level. So the bulk of the EIAs are in the provinces and are processed in the EIA applications are processed in the provinces. We provided the EIA frameworks and guidelines as I indicated and established new capacity and support directorate within the department to focus on supporting and assisting the provinces. Responses were provided within the given time frames in cases of appeals. Again, within the regulations, there is an outline of how long and what the process is of handling appeals. So those were done, were handled within the stipulated time frames, and we had 100% success rate against court challenges with regard to authorization. The EIA capacity and support initiatives, as I've indicated, this is just dwelling much more into it. Further on, we have established a national environmental authorization system, which is supposed to be an electronic system, and even the data in terms of what is in the pipeline, we should be able to access that information countrywide and determine the status in terms of what is being processed on EIA applications and so on. So it would allow for us to track progress and give reports at the press of the button. That system then, the development of it had started in the last financial year. In compliance with the environmental management system, we have developed various guidelines as outlined, the emergency incident guideline, inspection of waste facilities, hazardous waste disposal sites, and the guideline for priority setting. And Peter Luki would then come back and expand more on this if members want more information. And around environmental management inspectorate, the Green Scorpions members, I think there was, you were given a report some time ago, and even during our joint strategic planning session early this year, the department was indicating that it would scale up in this area. In the last year, we then trained 890 inspectors, environmental inspectors, and 798 were then designated. You still have to be designated in terms of the law. Even if after training, it's not automatic that you then be designated until you are then given such a designation and appointed as an inspector, environmental inspector. The ID cards then were issued to all designated EMIs, which is 798. We have developed an EMI brand, and it's being rolled out countrywide. There is even a uniform you can identify our Green Scorpions. And if members want to see the uniform, we can make it available. Sir Pity Peter decided not to wear the uniform today. We have EMI specialized training in forensics that has been rolled out. We have a partnership with the magistrates and a prosecutor's manual on environmental crimes was completed in order for a provision of information for appreciation of the prosecutors in relation to environmental crimes. And then around the policy and legislation, we have a bill on enforcement, an amendment of NEMA that seeks to expand the mandate of the inspectors or the Green Scorpions, and also to aid them to give effect to some of the provisions under ICA and APA, which is our old laws, which is the Environmental Conservation Act and the Air Pollution Act. The old Air Pollution Act. And on enforcement, we have a number of achievements. Two strategic sector-based national compliance enforcement projects were launched with provinces and municipalities. We have 11 new dockets in major investigations that were opened and handed over to NPA for prosecution. Even our airport company, when they decided to continuously have an oil spill, we did an investigation at the OR Tambo International Airport, and that's something that it was still being discussed with the authorities. One criminal conviction and a sentence for pollution crimes. 14 administrative notices were issued to companies for non-compliance in the last year. And in respect to policy and legislation, we have a draft waste bill which is coming before Parliament. Tire regulations were published for public comment last year and they are being finalized this year. And we have draft agreements that were developed around paper and plastic bag industry, and in line with the National Waste Management Bill, these would not necessarily be against what we anticipate to have out once the waste bill is enacted. The asbestos regulations were redrafted and published for comment. And on waste management and capacity around landfill permitting backlog, as members might again recall, this was a function that was being handled by the Department of Water Affairs and Forestry, permitting of landfill sites, which was transferred to DIT. And we then had to establish the status and understand the backlog. And we are now in a position to understand what we are dealing with. There are permits now being issued timeously, and we have an audit of waste management service delivery that was undertaken. And on the other projects that are underway, the NIP projects and the ASP, which is the Africa Stockpile Program, and the National Implementation Plan members. I apologize for this abbreviation. The air quality priority areas were also, you might recall, we declared one priority area last year, which is the Vaal, in the Vaal Triangle. And we also, in the last year, developed a framework or a strategy for air quality priority area management. We have a review of APA permits, which has been on track or in progress. And we have an equipment that we've purchased for a number of monitoring stations, 6 monitoring stations. As you might be aware, this is one area, members, that we've had to get the equipment over from companies overseas to install it in priority areas, and those priority areas are outlined there. There was Font Lumine Secondary School in Diepkloof, Sharpeville, Cape River, Vereeniging, Vanderbijl, and Zamdela. We have established a priority area governance committee which represents stakeholders in priority areas. For instance, in the Vaal, when we declare it as a priority area, municipalities and various groups, even the NGO sector, there is a stakeholder forum where we then discuss and make decisions around the air quality issues for that priority area. A new priority area was identified last year, being the Highveld, and it was then which then would then be declared or was declared this year. We commenced the work on the development of the third greenhouse gas emission inventory. The air quality marketa aimed at building capacity within communities and the industry are held annually. We had one last year. It was the first air quality marketa in the year that we are reporting on. And the LTMS, which is the long-term mitigation process, is on track with the full stakeholder participation. This is an area around climate change members, where we, as a department, we are seeking to establish a climate change policy which would inform a reduction of emissions in future, or what would be our targets in future as a country. In pursuance of international cooperation under Program 1 admin, pursuing a global sustainable agenda, the department participated in negotiations of South African positions in a number of key global engagements, the GEF and Stockholm and so on, as they are outlined there. I'm not going to go through each one of them, members. Suffice to say, maybe also just to indicate that we had prepared a negotiation position last year for CITES, which is the Convention on Trade in Endangered Species, and in particular around the sale of ivory. There were quotas that we were looking at against a moratorium on the sale of ivory, because we've got a huge stocks in our national parks, particularly on ivory. Around resource mobilization, we finalized the new European multi-annual indicative program, which would result in an allocation of about 980 euros to South Africa from 2007 to 2013. These then include funding of the environmental portfolio. With the Norwegians, we continued to pursue our agreement for fisheries, and the Danes around urban environmental management, we still reached an agreement of 250 million rand of funding for the next 5 years. On planning and reporting, we adhered to planning and reporting requirements as per legislative prescripts. As I indicated, even this report was tabled on time. We published the State of the Environment report, and around governance, we engaged with provinces on an intergovernmental framework on environment, which would consider what the priorities are across the national and provincial departments of environment, including resource allocations, because there are provinces which are less funded than the others. So that document it was approved by NIMET last year, and then we had our engagement with the National Treasury in this current financial year. And a common budget structure also was then drafted in the same lines of that IGFR process. On transformation and improved performance management, 49% expenditure was achieved for BEE, or we spent on BEE, and this was lower than to the previous year, which we had achieved 57%. Due to high demand on professional services and limited capacity. The department's audit report from the Auditor General was unqualified, and as you might see from the report or the letter from the Auditor General, that's part of the document or the annual report. We are now in a process of implementing a balance scorecard. That process has begun in the last year in question, just to make sure that we align our business performance with the individual manager's performance agreement. And on improving service delivery, we initiated a forum for engaging NGOs two times a year, and that is being chaired by the DG. And the department website was hosted, and we are now trying to, as I indicated earlier on, to integrate, because we've got a number of websites within the department, and whilst we are in that process, there have been problems in other areas of the website, but at least we still had 98% uptime and 19% increase in traffic, and we received good visitor feedback, and we also developed a customer satisfaction index in the last year, and the results of that would then be available in this reporting, in the new reporting period. We established mechanisms to facilitate relations with various stakeholders. The department completed its master systems plan, which is aimed at improving and at automating the department's business processes, both in terms of interacting with internal stakeholders and our external stakeholders. We have 94 interns in the program last year by the 31st of March. We developed a graduate science program for marine and coastal management. I had indicated that when I was reporting on the MCM program. And on part-time bursaries, by the end of March, we had 72 part-time bursaries and 41 full-time bursaries and 28 bursaries that were added in 2007. Over and above these, the DG herself in her office has got two interns that are involved with research and policy making. And in retaining a representative and a performing team, we achieved our targets around our EE targets, except for our disability targets, still below 2%. And the department has now put in place a process where we have to try and improve on this, on our achievement in this area. We particularly engaged the presidency, the desk that is responsible for people with disabilities, to assist us with recruiting processes, as well as then also giving support once we have we've attracted people with disabilities within the department. We also designated posts to make sure that those posts then are filled with people with disabilities, just to make sure that we are able to meet the targets. Under legal services, the department has established a unit that deals with the law reform issues and litigation. Initially, we used to have one or two people there. Now we've got a full component, both in Pretoria and Cape Town. And that also has resulted in a protocol being established for handling appeals and speeding up our legal processes. Our challenge is still this SMS turnover rate. Senior managers are leaving the organization. We are not sure about the reasons. There are some things that point to the fact that they become people become more mobile and they are in great demand. And it's not easy, as you even try and give counter offers, it's not easy to retain people. And there might be other reasons which we'll then be able to pick up from the perception survey. In terms of communications, we have a draft stakeholder relations strategy that was achieved last year. And in IT, I've already indicated that we've got a master systems plan. And the other issue was then focus area is management of financial resources. As I indicated, that the audit report of the previous financial year had six matters of emphasis, and all of those matters of emphasis were addressed in the year in question that we are reporting on in compliance with the PFMA, and we achieved an expenditure of 99%. We have a program on wellness for staff, supporting staff, and making available programs on HIV support, support for people with disabilities. And on the social responsibility program, we also achieved the number of jobs that we targeted. We created 13,800 job opportunities with 459 permanent jobs. And training was provided, and in the various areas of work on rehabilitating wetlands, tourism product development, and we also had people that were out of those beneficiaries that were then registered on learnership and taken up by companies for experimental learning. The Auditor General's report, Chair and Honourable Members, is, if I were to refer you to page 36 and 37 of the annual report, it indicates that we've got the report is unqualified, there are no matters of emphasis. There are other matters, however, those matters of non-compliance, they are covered in our risk assessment that is conducted regularly. And on the area of value for money, in terms of human resource management, the 25% vacancy rate that we have, both in terms of people that leave the organization and are in an inability to attract people to the organization. There is an audit committee in compliance with the PFMA, and that audit committee also concurred and accepted the conclusions of the Auditor General on the annual financial statements. The CFO and Ralph can expand on this if members want to know more. But this is reflected, the audit committee report is reflected on page 28 of the report. The audit committee is of the opinion that the audited financial statements fairly present the position and performance of the department based on the audit done and the report of the Auditor General. That is their declaration, if I may say. And just in terms of our budget and expenditure, we had a budget of 2,061,804, and we spent by the 31st of March 2006 2,059,664, and the variance is 2,140,000. So in terms of percentage on of the appropriated funds, 99.9% was spent, and that is what is contained in the tabled annual report. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for covering space that you did. We thank you for that, and without wasting any time, I open the gate from the side that we more in into this subject matter. Honorable Van Rijen.
Chairperson, just three issues that I want to raise. Chairperson, first of all, must congratulate the department for the unqualified audit report. I think it's one of the few national departments that received the unqualified audit report for this financial year. But I want to come back to the technical quality of the annual report. Chairperson, again, this was a very difficult report to read in terms of trying to put the strategic objectives with their outputs and also their budget. And I think on page 37 of the annual report, if we go to there, the Auditor General also raised his concern about that. And I think the department, they are under audit findings. The difference between the planned and the actual performance was not clearly documented. And I had the same problem, Chairperson, because I had to go from this document to the previous annual report and to this document to try and link up the strategic objectives. And then what came out to me, which was actually a bit of the problem, that in this annual report they gave broad policy statements. They didn't give us details of what was achieved. And there's various examples of that. If you go to page 14 under tourism, they talk that the department's strategic policy approach has been to develop a sector by stimulating domestic and international tourism demand. removing blockages and actively support tourism growth, broadening participation in order to alleviate poverty. Now, nowhere other than alleviate poverty, the word poverty, did I find it in this annual report. So, it's all good enough that they give us, but it was not in my understanding of an annual report, and I don't think that is what is understood by Treasury and the Treasury regulations when they have to submit their annual report. I'm not talking about the financials, but about what has actually happened. Also, nowhere do I find any reference to the State of the Nation address by the President, or what is mentioned there. Nowhere have I found the minister's budget vote speech in the NA, any reference to that, and also in the National Council of Provinces. I'm actually looking for those things, and I could not find it, because there are certain objectives and strategic outputs was mentioned. So on that issue, Chairperson, the statutory bodies, there is mention made of them, but I cannot, from a departmental point of view, get a sense what is the effectiveness of these departments. Although these departments do submit separate annual reports, but my understanding of the department's annual report is they should reflect on the impact of these statutory bodies and their effectiveness. Because, after all, the department is transferring money to them, and what monitoring mechanism. So, technically, I find it a very difficult report to try and link up this and to actually ask questions. Because in some instances I had to go to the previous annual report to see what they have said there. I had to go to this other document that they presented to us at the beginning of the year. And now this presentation here also today, Shepherd. Some instances they presented stuff to us here that is not in the annual report. I tried to look, especially the one that I picked up was on the enforcement achievements. I actually made a note in my annual report that I could not find anything around that, because that was subsection. If I just get my bearings right, Chairperson. Why no report on regulated service subgrove on that subgrove program? It is not in here. Unless I've missed it. So, and there's also some contradictions, Chairperson, from this and the annual report. Because of the third issue, Chairperson, because of the lack of time, I think we are under pressure. We have to go to another meeting that we can't postpone. I would like to request that we do the same thing that we did with the Department of Agriculture, that we give them written questions, and that either they come back and respond to those things to us, and I hope this time the Director General is here to respond to this, or they can write respond in writing through the Secretary. I leave it through, because there is quite a lot of questions that I've got, especially in terms of the tourism, because the stats doesn't make add up. Some of the things that's given to us by stats, South Africa, and what is given here. So there's some serious questions that I want to raise. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Van Rooyen. Honorable Dulani.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine on page 9. I wanted to check when you are giving us achievements in tourism, whether that is at 87,281 is including the Kruger National Park on upgrading of the room, just because this committee once visited there.
If yes, I'll be happy. If not, are you having a budget for that? That's because we have just put the figure there, no specification which are you upgrading. I don't know whether you are upgrading just the accommodation in general, not including where our DG, she is now, just because we've identified problems there, and we've seen that international visits, they are going around there with our DG. I wanted to check that. Also, in this tourism safety, I'm worried about this safety and security for establishing 5 provinces. I'm worried about 2010, whether in your budget coming or whatever, if other, it's only 5 provinces that are budgeted, but I'm talking about my province. I know that in the metro, Nelson Metro, it's going to have something happening there, but when the safety and security is not provided in those areas, what are you going to do? I know we're in the other slides you're saying that the other provinces, and they are not improving in the tourism, that they are not visiting, but there are those international visitors which they did take a visit there. So I'm worried if other provinces are not included. And in page 15, if we do have time, but my colleague just proposed in page 15 in that page, the tourism, I wanted somebody to unpack this, the SME support, the second economy intervention. I'm really interested on what does that mean. I've seen whatever you've written, if we can have a chance. Not talking about now spending or whatever, but telling us in this percentage what does that mean, just because it's a national problem, this second economy. If in your response you can unpack that. And then page 16, I don't know, Chairperson, I've been not with the committee of tourism, that the committee, you know. I don't know whether you have ever been given the reasons of those challenges of depletion of marine stocks, and my concern is about this thing of abalone. So I don't know whether we have ever committed reported that thing, just because of that. I was just seeing the minister in the TV and the people rejecting whatever decision that has been taken by the minister. So I don't know. I wanted to check whether when we are responding, not today, are you going to afford us that opportunity in order that we must know what is going on exactly. And in page 23, also in page 29, I would love that in that biodiversity conservation, you know, I was listening carefully when you're saying that you have been discussing with the provinces these norms and standards of published elephant management policy. I'm hoping that really it's like that, just because sometimes our provinces, when we're going there, they will be behaving as if this thing, it didn't come to our provinces. And then page 23, my other, on my left hand side, there's a member, honorable member, who sometimes put another cap called Chairperson of Housing. We're in the Eastern Cape in PE. This problem of this EIA, it was a challenge, really. I'm confirming that when you're talking the process of blocking development, it was a serious problem, concerning housing in PE, and we were wondering, we went there being gone there for housing committee, we were saying that what are we doing as in environment if there's this problem in cry of in this EIA. Really, it's very problematic, and I would love that one other time or when we are responding, you can tell us what have you done in different special municipalities. I don't know if not whether it's your function or it's a provincial function, but it's a serious problem. I was happy when you even think that it is say that it's blocking development. We have experienced poor housing. Thank you so much.
Honorable Adam.
Chair, thank you very much. Sorry for being late, but I was just delayed at another meeting. Chair, I'll also put my questions in writing because I've got not a basket full, but I've got a drum full. So, but the others I'll put in writing. Chair, it is just, I think 2 or 3 years ago at a workshop with Pete, I think it was in Seapoint. We have, I think this committee has raised serious concerns about aquaculture. And it was just brushed off the table at that workshop. And it's shocking to hear now the minister coming out and says that we need to invest in aquaculture. But this was the department that brushed it off the table at that time, or didn't take it seriously. Now they want to force South Africans to seriously consider aquaculture. I want to find out from this department. I mean, it's a problem that everybody could have foreseen, that knows the sea, knows the poachers, that our stocks will be depleted in some sort of space of time, very shortly. why then the sudden about turn, and why didn't they start at that time when the committee advised them to start? The department says, no, they can't do anything, land affairs, land and agriculture. And then it was shifted to water affairs and forestry. And then they said, no, but they are waiting on those two departments. And now all of a sudden, the department says, we want to take the leading role in doing the aquaculture thing. Why didn't they start that time? Why wait till the stocks have been depleted? I mean, they've got scientists, they've got researchers. It's a trend that was all the time there. So it just boggles my mind how departments sometimes work. And Chair, another serious thing is this, this green scorpions or sea fisheries patrols. It's shocking to see or to hear or to read that an officer of Marine Coastal Management Patrol had to risk his life without a firearm and to borrow a boat to catch poachers. What's happening? They have been paraded at the budget debate. The minister has introduced, there's the green scorpions on the balcony. They will patrol our fisheries. I think it was also mentioned that the help of the SANDF or the Navy would be brought in to patrol these coastal areas. I mean, where is the funds to buy new boats and all that? It was also promised to us at the workshop at the Vineyard Hotel that, no, don't worry, MCM will be 100% up and running. There's not a problem with MCM. But somewhere along the line, the hoha starts creeping out. Somewhere. Someone needs to tell us what's happening. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Maybe let me just add to what was said. I want to say something on the EIA, which really poses very serious concerns. You say 5,300 applications were done, only 3,200 could be complied with. I do not know whether does it concern big companies, whether the emerging people features within that number. Because there are serious problems on the ground when when EIA has to be done, our people have to go to private consultants. And private consultants ask exorbitant amounts for doing nothing. Just paperwork. I may quote an instance where an EIA was requested to do a family grave site. A family grave site. Maybe the size of this room. But they had to pay over 20,000 rand for the EIA, for solely doing nothing. I really have concerns on that. And I would love also to understand, if you talk in terms of applications to provinces and applications to national, which applications go to provinces and which applications goes to national? If it goes to national, which applications are those? Is it application done by consultants? Or is there any other way of submitting an application for an EIA except through the consultant? This really poses a very serious problem, more especially as building up towards the 2010. Many people will be left out because the EIA is a real stumbling block on issues which are existing in that very environment, where people have to pay an exorbitant. When I quote this example of the grave site, that's a grave site adjacent where EIA was not done, because this one is now a new grave site. The EIA has to be done because there are regulations, and this person has to pay over 20,000 rand for just paperwork done. No drilling, no nothing. And therefore, there's something I'd love to understand, because there are people in my constituency who want to apply for the EIA.
Okay, Chair, I think let me just attempt to answer some of the questions and my colleagues will follow up. Quickly, maybe another thing, Mr. Van Rooyen, raised an issue.
I don't know whether should we say the question should be answered in writing, or so that we take the questions which are there.
Can I attempt to answer some? Then we hear whether you still, because for instance on the question on the strategic objective and the comment that's also on the letter from the Auditor General. This document is resembling what was approved in the EME document. So the things that must be corrected cannot be corrected on this report. They have to be corrected on the next EME, which is what we're working on now with Treasury. We normally submit it around December. And the answers, I mean, we agree that the strategic objectives, there is no way, this format comes from Treasury. They give us the format. It's having the heading sub-program output measure. In our threat plan, we have strategic objectives, key performance indicators, and so on and so on. So there is not quite an alignment with it. And that's something that we are aware of, and we discussed it when the auditor raised it, and we are discussing with Treasury. We don't know whether Treasury will change the format. If they don't change the format, we'll still keep this format, but we'll still try and make sure that the indicators are as close as what we have in the threat plan. But we will not have the strategic objectives here. We will also not have the things that are said by the ministers and the state of the national trust, because this document is prescribed by Treasury. We use the format as they provide to departments. Following the other questions, I think there is definitely, I mean, the department with the whole business performance management system, we are always trying to improve on the way we do things. And I think that must also be something that we can say, yes, we need to improve on our indicators. There's some other things can be measured better than others. And others, it's not even easy to measure in terms of the type of work that we do.
But we've got a system now that is assisting us with developing a performance management system, which is called the balance scorecard. The other parts on the technical quality of the document, honorable member was, for instance, referring to the enforcement achievement. The section that you are referring to, the first section is outlining the thing and the objectives and broadly giving stories. But then the table gives them the actual, these measures that we talk to. You can see on the, on page 20, you have the sub-program regulatory services, increased in compliance with environmental legislation. Then on the achievements, that's where you have 798 EMIs designated and all of those. So those are the things that I had on the slide. So the document, the table, those details that are on the slides are also on this table, if you look on page 20, honorable member. And then around the... So I can make the example of that in terms of the regulatory services. I think it was the enforcement, and what was the other one that was said not to be here? MCM, you have under the MRLF, you have that page 23, which outlines all of that information that's on that page. Tourism, you also mentioned tourism. Tourism development and all the things that we were reporting on are also on page 25. That's from page 24. And then the effectiveness on the statutory bodies, I agree, in this document is not reflected strongly at all, actually. And the reason, I mean, I think the last time, if you remember, honorable member, we did say that we're developing a governance framework. That governance framework was signed with the public entities last year, or a year before last, that was 2005, and now we are effectively using that. So what we do in the governance framework, we outline all the prescripts. The CFO of the department is an ex-official member of the audit committee of the public entities. They submit quarterly reports, and those quarterly reports go to Treasury. So all of those things are ticked by Treasury, and they use that when they then audit their own books. And that information then goes in their annual report. So we can give you a status and say, all the public entities, they've submitted on time, their audit reports are fine, the state financial statements, or they can come and present themselves to the committee. But it's not reflected in our report, the oversight. The honorable member is right. And then on the other questions around so our monitoring framework is there. We're using a governance framework, and which is signed and approved by the minister. And the auditors check that we then use it, and that's what we assess the public entities on. The PACS and the grading question by the honorable member. The number, yes, includes PACS. We, in the past, we used not to grade protected areas. So with this opportunity of 2010 of non-hotel accommodation being made available and prioritized also by FIFA, that they can contract and sign contracts with whoever, whether it's the Stern Parks or even a private individual, it has opened that opportunity that we grade the establishment. So Stern Parks, in their business plan, they've got a target of how many rooms they are grading. Already they can be made a report for this year, because we said this agreement was signed only last year. So the implementation has then ensued this year. That information can be made available in terms of what the progress is. So they are also being graded, and all the national parks, actually, they've gone through for the grading system. And then around the safety and security and provinces and budgeting, it is a fact, madam, and the honorable member, that the safety function is not environment and tourism function. Provinces are saying, as much as we all agree that that safety plan covers the things that we want, but some are saying we don't have money. and they are not given money by their provinces. So it depends from province to province and how they also work with safety and security, which is why I said earlier on that, for instance, Western Cape has got an interesting model. They even have a structure in their department for just focusing on safety for tourists. But others cannot. Other MECs are not willing to do that. And it has been discussed extensively at MINEC because there is a department that's supposed to be undertaking that. So that, it's not that they are, those others are prioritized or they are given budget by DIT, or it's because they don't have the budget. So we just work cooperatively on things that we can do together, like the brochure where each has got safety tips. All of them have it, but then other things they might not have. And then lastly, let me just talk quickly on the SMME support. I think, Honourable Member, we can provide a briefing, because that's an area where, I mean, you just need to probably need information about exactly how the system works and how do we do weather targeting and who are the SMEs that are involved and where they are in the country in terms of distribution. That can be, I think we can agree on a briefing. And even if it's not the DG, the branch tourism can have a meeting with you to discuss the tourism second economy strategy and the SME support program. Then depletion of marine stocks, the question around what are the causes, I would leave that quick for Dr. Hussein to talk to. And then norms and standards on elephants. Honourable Member, it is correct that it's been discussed with provinces, and MINEC has approved that we publish those norms. Now, this coming MINEC, the last MINEC of this year, in 30th, which is next Friday, 30th of November, will then be signing off on the final norms and standards. So, for elephant management. And then around the, what are we doing about, I mean, the EIA situation, the audit report was presented to MINEC. So MECs know in their provinces that I have a problem on capacity. I have this problem. I have a backlog of so much. But the stats that you have here is last year's statistics. The situation has improved enormously in this year. We can also make information available for this current financial year, but we're talking about the last financial year when we started the program of support to provinces. And there are reports quarterly that go to MINEC around what are the trends and what are the nature of the delays, if there are delays on the, some of the EIAs that are being processed. And then lastly, just on Honourable Member Aronson, I'm not sure, I'm sorry. So the aquaculture policy, I think when we discussed, at least I was already here in the department myself or involved when this matter was discussed, as you correctly say, during the meeting at Seaport. And we understood that we were investigating what are the prospects of aquaculture and what would be the DIT involvement, because it's not a clear-cut function of us as DIT. Which is why the Honourable Chair, I think on a number of occasions, wanted clarity on why are we taking on board. The issue of taking on and investing in aquaculture was taken, a decision was taken, I think I would say, even as early as 2002 or 2003 in the department. There's been research work, and maybe Dr. Hussein can expand on it, but that has been donor-funded kind of support, which was undertaken by some of the universities. But even there, even now, we still have questions about what is our role as DIT. Are we a promoter of an industry? Are we a regulator of an industry? Because we are interested, our concerns are on environmental impact, but we also want the fish. We would be happy if people don't take fish from the wild, but rather have access to a fish that's produced somewhere. So the decision was taken not now, that we let's explore the industry. And then, hence the draft aquaculture policy. The first draft came out in early last year, which was 2006, and it's been trenched between us and provinces and those departments that are involved. And up to now, I mean, there was a workshop in in around June in Port Alfred with all the fishing communities. After we paid for some kind of a study tour for the groups, the community groups that are in, that represent the fisheries and the fishing communities, government, provinces, and I mean national and provinces, and even local. And we from those lessons, we even had a researcher that then came back and presented what has been happening in what's his country, in various countries, whether it's Norway and what have you, what has been the trend, what has been the objective, what has been the turnover and so on of the industry, and what has been the disease problem. So I think we could maybe come back, and because I think we owe the committee a briefing in that regard, to come and make a presentation on exactly what is in the aquaculture policy and what informs it. Because now the minister, when he was making the announcement, already we have even started funding a feasibility on which site, because we have an issue about environmental impact around the aquaculture and the spread of diseases and possible pollution and hybridization that can occur. So we have to look, and our coast is very, it's not as calm as other countries. We have to take all of those issues into consideration. So I think I would say this is not a question that we can answer in respect of the annual report. It's a question that we probably have to answer in a form of a briefing to the honorable members. And then lastly, the issue of green scorpions and firearm, Peter can also talk to it. Can you quickly come in, colleagues? Johan and you can start, Peter.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable members.
Can you also just deal with the Reverend's question?
Absolutely.
But I just thought, I mean, the key thing, Reverend, is that the EIA regulations, the new EIA regulations, also are beginning to help us to deal with some developments which are not critical. We can deal with them as similar activities, depending on how we've done planning in the area. If we've done a strategic environmental assessment, which is a broad plan that outlines these are the sensitive areas, we have groundwater problems in this area, we've got whatever problem from an environmental, that information becomes available, and that we fund ourselves as DIT to develop such a plan, and the regulations now allow us to use, to do that kind of broad planning with the provinces. And then some of the EIAs then would not have to go through the system. But it is not possible that we don't charge completely the issue, because the EIA regulations are based on the fact that they must be done by an independent consultant. The reason for independence is that if you apply, you want the graveyard here, or you want the house here, you want it. You are not interested in whether they are environmental impacts or not, which is why you need some independence, somebody that's going to say the reality of the situation is that here you have groundwater, this grave is going to contaminate water, and that water is going to cause more problems of health for the whole of the society or in a bigger area, which is why we have to have that information being assessed by a specialist, number one, and somebody that is independent who is not necessarily the applicant. So that is in the regulations. We can't change now necessarily. But I think we can have debates around maybe what in the long run should be done if there are things that you think that or that will come up which have not been thought through when we are doing the amendments to the EIA regulations. But Peter would be able to talk to those issues particularly as a technocrat in this field.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable members, being described as the technocrat. If I could just quickly just touch on the two aspects of enforcement. I think honourable members will be happily surprised, I think, to see this year's report about the improvement in enforcement as well. I mean, the green scorpions is a new concept, and it's been going from strength to strength. And so I think if you want to draw a graph of the kind of impact they're having since their formation, it's impressive results. And it's not just a case of dealing with minor polluters or what have you, I mean, they've actually got the courage to deal with major issues, as you've probably seen from the press, in terms of actually taking on such industrial giants like Mittal Steel and so on and so forth in the Vaal Triangle. So you'll see in next year's reports this continuous improvement in our enforcement capacity, but not just ours, but across the board, at provincial level and in the state-owned enterprises and our various organizations. In terms of the question around firearms, dealing with firearms and firearms training is a very, very specialized training itself. And giving a member a firearm as well also opens that member to potentially violent responses just by having a gun. Now, in terms of the Green Scorpions, there are certain agencies that actually have undergone full firearms training and know how to use this sort of thing. So typically in the parks boards, your rangers will have weapons training and they'll have firearms. I'm sure Johan can actually comment on from the Marine Coastal Zone Management. But in general, the EMIs are not equipped with firearms, and for very good reason, because there's one piece of the standard operating procedure of an EMI. And the first thing is never to put that environmental management inspector in danger of life and limb. If there's any chance, for instance, that they're dealing with environmental criminals who may be armed, it is the necessity of the EMI to approach the South African Police Services and go with the South African Police Services, people who are properly trained. The idea of having 1,000 EMIs running around with guns on their hips is scary in the extreme, unless they've gone through full paramilitary training, which is not the intention. You want to give them proper environmental management training. So that's the situation. And it's a straight down the line rule, is that if an EMI believes they may be going into any threat, then they must bring the appropriate people with them, which of course is the South African Police Service. On the aspect of EIAs, Chair, first of all, I mean, it's nice that we're obviously improving, because your grave site example is the same example you used a year ago. So it means that we've obviously had improvements in the last year. And it's true, I think the improvements are very, very important, because first of all, you will have all seen the State of the Environment report from July, a dramatic document that shows that our environmental quality is not improving. It's not. Our rivers are not getting better. Our wetlands are not improving. Our biodiversity is not improving. In every single measure of environmental quality, we're not improving. We're getting worse. We're killing more rivers. More species are dying. We're killing more land. And when we kill the land, nothing grows. It turns into desert. And the only tool that we have in terms of sustainable development, by ensuring that our resources are properly managed and that we don't lose our rivers, because if we lose our rivers, we basically lose our water. We lose our life. The only tool that we actually have for this is the environmental impact assessment. It's the only management tool that we have. It always comes under the whip, because it's seen as this way of stopping development. The reality is the only tool we have of ensuring sustainable development. Without it, the figures that we have in terms of the reducing quality of our environment would just be dramatic. The wetlands would be lost. Our rivers would be destroyed. So this is an exceptionally important tool. However, with any government tool, as the CIO said, if a government tool is taken to its ridiculous consequences, i.e. in terms of small little developments that really have absolutely very, very little impact, to take it to a situation of that, of course, is crazy. It becomes bureaucracy turned wild. And I think the new regulations have solved that. They've solved the problem by providing two or three different ways of approaching the IAs, a pre-screening process, which you can see, this is a trivial issue, off you go. In other words, even with the first application, there can be a decision made for saying this is a trivial matter, its environmental impact does not, there will be no benefit from going through a process like this, and therefore it's given exemption, and so it goes on. In terms of backlog figures, Chair, in terms of the new regulations, we have no backlog whatsoever. We're completely on track, and that is in line with legislative timeframes. The turnaround times are put in law, and we stuck to them. We're still dealing with some of the old backlogs, but as you've heard, we've been pumping money into provinces themselves to actually deal with that with extra capacity and what have you, and the figures have improved quite dramatically. So the EIA becoming as the sort of like whipping post for any lack of development is a thing of the past. And people will have to start looking far more deeply into why development isn't happening, because the ERA can no longer be used as a scapegoat. That's the reality. In terms of the EIA process, is that an EIA, if for instance the applicants themselves are the EIA, of course they will find that their application is not going to have any impact. Even if you had a developer who was going to put an aluminium smelter in the middle of a wetland, they would say there is no environmental impact. There has to be an independent audit. It has to be independent. And however, with that said, in terms of developments in poor areas with poor people as the developer, the department is in the process of actually putting up an entire system to actually provide independent support to them. In other words, they don't have to pay for the consultant because in many instances they don't have the money to pay for the consultant. But it really comes down to this first initial SIF. You only do an EIA where you believe that an EIA will actually add benefit to our sustainable development. If, for instance, it's trivial, there is absolutely no justification on earth for us to do an EIA. And so at least we have that decision-making process right up front. Then in terms of who does the EIAs, the National Department actually does something like 1%, actually less, 0.5% of EIAs are done at the national level. The only EIAs that the National Department does are for the parastatals. In other words, all the Eskom EIAs, the big power stations and so on and so forth. All the major linear developments, so all the toll roads and the big roads and what have you, the National Department does, as well as the overhead power lines and so on and so forth. And we also do the EIAs in terms of things like sand parks, and if province themselves are doing stuff. We also sometimes do the EIAs on new developments where there is no national policy and there may have policy implications. So typically, for instance, the workaround, members may know that there's been this increased move for cement kilns to burn hazardous waste in cement kilns. And because it has national policy implications, we don't have a policy on using cement kilns to burn hazardous waste. So those EIAs are taken to the National Department so we have some uniformity across the nation. But when it comes down to it, the reality is that what we may deal with 35 big EIAs, and these are big, I mean these are nuclear power stations and these sort of things. We may deal with 35 big EIAs a year, where provinces like Gauteng deal with 3,500 a year. So that's the order of magnitude between us. So the reality is that the bulk of EIAs across the nation is done by the provincial authority. And in terms of the kind of workaround, how they set up the things, they're completely autonomous. They can set up their entire systems themselves. Naturally, from the National Department side, we try to give uniformity. So we give guidelines on how to do things so that we don't have a situation where one province takes 2 days to make a decision, whereas another one takes 2 years, although that's not allowed anymore. So that's what we really do. We provide the kind of guidance to a system. And in many instances, of course, the National Department...
Sorry, I must come in here. We really have a problem of time. We wanted to engage up to 1 o'clock, but we are having a meeting at after 12. And there are other things we must do. I see Honorable Tau wanted to come in. Honorable Royen, are you proposing the way forward?
I think it will serve as part of the way forward. I mean, I got very excited when Peter made the statement to say, in actual fact, the whole process of EIAs now is a thing of the past. But I must say, Honorable Chair, that just 2 or 3 weeks ago, no, last month, we had Sunrun before public services. And one of the key things that Sunrail kept on raising around the improvement of the roads, and especially dirty roads, is because of the processes or problems that they experience with the Department of Environmental Affairs when it comes to EIAs. And Peter, let me tell you, I'm a victim now, because I spoke, the reason why we raised that issue, it was around the N12. And just a week after that, the very same problems that I raised with Sunrail, I was involved in an accident for the same reason. Because they say they can't build shoulder on that road between Christiana and Warrington. It's a very narrow road, and if it is raining, it becomes much more dangerous and it can be very deadly. So one of the problems that we're raising is because of the problems that they're experiencing. So I'm just raising this thing to look at the extent to which there's that interdepartmental relations and on issues that you specifically raised. The maybe, I mean, we have been making a lot of commitments to come back and brief us on further issues and so forth, without taking anything away from what the CEO was speaking and so forth. But it would be important that, and it's not the first time we raise this thing as well, that over and above the structure of the annual report, but because of this house is a council of provinces, I'm interested to want to know what is happening in my province. I'm not saying change the structure. I'm not saying go against what treasury regulations expect you to do. You can still come with the structure as prescribed by treasury regulations. But over and above that, give us an understanding. If you talk about the expanded public works program, for instance, I'm interested to know what is the impact of what that the department is doing in the Northern Cape. How many jobs have we created in the Northern Cape? How many of them are permanent and so forth? But what we are getting in the report are more of your generic report. So the way they present to us is as if they are presenting to the portfolio committee of the National Assembly, whereas we are interested in what is happening in our provinces and be able to do follow-up and oversight on some of these things that they are reflecting. I mean, one can raise so many things, including this whole issue of the EIA in terms of our experience in the Eastern Cape, where an EIA report came out to say houses could be built in a particular land, only to find out that it's a wetland. And who did the EIA? It's the Department of Environmental Affairs. It's a province. So, but these are some of the things that I'm talking about. I mean, we cannot just then sit back and say, no, it's a province. But to what extent are we giving that support that is expected and so forth? So maybe these are things that we'll be able to thoroughly engage the department as you've been committing to come back and give us more details on certain things and so forth, you know. Okay, I can see we are quite under pressure now.
I think we will arrange. We have been waiting for the briefing on the EIA only, nothing else, because it has got serious implications. Let's look how are we going to fit it in again so that they come back on that. Honorable Fanoia.
Just quickly, on the technical quality of the bill, I mean, the PFMA in clause section 41D, it clearly states what the annual report should be like. And in the Treasury Regulations 18.3.1, it also gives you. And there's one section under include any additional information required by Parliament, and I think that just raised by the Honourable Tau, and or provincial legislators. So, I cannot buy it that this annual report is cast in stone and you can't deviate from. Of course, in my mind, the state of the nation address is the one thing that must be reflected, because that is where the president tells the nation what is going to happen that financial year. And he repeats it in the NCOP. So to say, because it's not there, it's not specifically there in section 41D of the PFMA, and also not in the Treasury regulation, I can't buy that. I think they must relook at the how this thing is done. But also just a quick reference on page 20, I still can't find where the 11 docs in major investigations was mentioned, one criminal conviction is mentioned, 14 administrative notices. If they can tell me where I find it, I will be glad that I missed it. Thank you, Chairperson.
Yeah, okay. Let's say there's still a way of responding in writing to the members. I think let's do that, because we really now under pressure. The committee reports, National Council of Provinces, one report of the Select Committee on Land and Environment last says on the annual report and financial statement for 0607 of the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism, dated 20 November 07. The Select Committee on Land and Environmental Affairs, having been briefed by the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism on its annual report and financial statement of vote 27 for 0607, including the report of the Auditor General
on the final statement of the vote 2740607 refer to it, report that it has concluded its deliberation thereon. Agreed?
Chairperson, I don't think we've finalized the report. We can note it, but we haven't finalized the report yet.
Is it agreed? Agreed. So it is noted. Let me thank the department for coming. It's unfortunate that we have to do it rushing. There are other commitments this committee has to do. And we thank you, wishing you a very busy and relaxing festive this season. We will definitely be interacting with you once more early next year. We hope we're building up the blocks towards turning around things on the ground for the betterment of our people. We wish you a very good time this festive season. Thank you very much, and you are your partner. There's lunch organized at the new wing, second floor, where you can enjoy lunch before you depart. There are three sets of minutes which we could do it quickly, which is interesting. We have the 23rd of October, 25th of October, and the 6th of November. And let's look at the 23rd of October. Are you there? Okay. All right. Okay. Do you have anything on this minute of the 23rd of October? Any proposal? Honorable Zulani, you propose. Any seconder? Seconder, Honorable Pandreya. Then we have this minute of the 25th of October before the committee. Honorable Adams was there, Honorable Matanyani was there, Honorable Oliphant was there. Proposed, Honorable Van Rooyen seconded? Seconda? Any seconda? Proposed by Honorable Van Rooyen? Any seconda? Okay. Okay. About our Honorable Oliphant. Minutes of the 6th of November. I just wanted to say I want to thank you heartily for your cooperation for this year. I think this committee has done much